So, Mayo, we have not one, not two, but three different pieces of Beats news to talk about to get started this week.
The Beat Goes On, which I believe was an Apple event strapline one time.
The Beat Goes On. Let's get started with the Beats Solo 4. So these are the updates to the Solo 3, which were first released in 2016. And remember, the Solo 3s were the first headphones to feature, what was it? Was it called the W1?
Apple's W1, first? Yep. Yeah. Because it was announced at the same time as AirPods, but obviously the AirPods didn't ship until the December.
Right.
So they started bringing out some of the Beats line first. So yeah, the Solo 3s are technically the first W chip headphones.
So it's been 8 years. And Beats said during the rollout of the Beats Solo 4 this week that the Beats Solo 3 have been basically their best-selling product, like every month, mm-hmm. especially during the holiday season, even though they haven't been updated in 8 years. They've just kind of been languishing there. Still with a micro USB port for charging, still with that W1 chip. But now we have Beats Solo 4. The design here, I've been using these for about the past week and a half or so. The design here is basically unchanged. Beats says it has a new ultra plush ear cushion design. Feels about the same to me. The design, though, is if of all the things they could have changed, I really wish they would have focused on the design more, because it is still the same exact form factor, made entirely of plastic and really cheap plastic at that. Like if you bend them just a little bit, they like creak and sound like mm-hmm. they're going to snap in half. You fold them up to put them in the carrying case and it seems like they're going to snap in half. I mean, the design does have some benefits to where they're super light. They weigh like 210 grams compared to AirPods Max, which are like 380 or something. And
yeah, AirPods Max, I've said this so many times, AirPods Max are so heavy. So heavy.
But again, unlike AirPods Max, they have 3.5mm headphone jack and now USB-C for charging, and the USB-C port can do lossless audio. AirPods Max have a single lightning port that can't do lossless audio at all. No headphone jack, just a lightning port.
What can the AirPods Max do at this point?
It's starting to look like something I ask myself every day when I put these things on.
Yeah. Don't worry, the update's coming later this year that's going to be revolutionary with a different port.
Do you think the USB-C port on AirPods Max will at least enable lossless? I hadn't thought about
that. Surely. I mean, maybe not if they're only changing the port and literally nothing else about them. But
right, because we said surely they would update the chip too, and they did not.
Yeah. I wonder if the current chip, though, could play lossless, and it's just because it's only Bluetooth access that it can't actually do it. So maybe they would be able to do that. But it's irrelevant because you can't hear lossless quality over those headphones anyway. So it's just a thing that's written down but doesn't make any sense.
That is true.
So what's actually new about the Solo 4s? Because the design is the same.
Design's the same. They say sound quality is better. It sounds the same to me. It sounds like every Beats headphone that's been released in the past 15 years.
Yeah, not bad.
Not bad, like, not great. Not as good as AirPods Max.
Yeah.
The battery life is up from 40 hours to 50 hours. Instead of the W1 chip, Beats is doing what they've done with all of their recent headphone releases, which is they use a custom Beats audio chip of some sort.
Unbranded chip, yeah.
And that gives you some things like AirPods, then also better compatibility with Android. So you do get personalized spatial audio with head tracking. You do get like the one touch pairing and the syncing across your iCloud account, but you don't get like autoplay pause. You know, when you put the headphones on, it starts mm-hmm. playing, you take them off, it pauses. That continues to be the biggest drawback of these, like this latest generation of Beats headphones, just because that's such a crucial feature and it's one of the best things about AirPods. There are multiple times where I was testing these Solo 4s and I would be listening to something, take them off, sit them on my desk, and then 20 minutes later come back and the music was still playing. Which is just not ideal for a number of reasons, including battery life, but Beats seems to think that the best strategy is to prioritize better compatibility with Android and iPhone, which is fine, I guess. I don't love it, but...
I mean, auto pause doesn't require Android or iOS integration. They could just do that themselves anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't really understand the strategy there. It does kind of feel like Apple's put some pressure on the subsidiary to be like, you can't use our branding anymore for the cool chips. Like, you got to get the second rate stuff, which is a bit sad, but it's good enough for what it is. And I'm not surprised that the Solos are the most popular ones. They're pretty inexpensive. They still have headphone jack, which is useful for like, you know, plugging into microphones and stuff. Like, and they're the cheapest Beats headphones that are like the standard form factor of headphones, right? So mm-hmm. like, there's no wonder they're so popular.
The price too is notable here because I think when Beats Solo 3 launched, they were $299. Then at some point over the past 8 years, I think relatively early on, they were dropped to $199, and Beats Solo 4 come in at $199, which that's a pretty compelling price point. I mean, anytime you release a new generation of something and the price doesn't change is notable, but especially when it's been so long in between iterations. Beats probably could have easily jacked the price up to like $249 and not gotten any pushback just because it had been so long. But they didn't, which is a good strategy, I think. It aligns with the overall Beats. I don't know, remember the world where Beats were considered expensive?
Yeah.
And they still are, yeah, but compared to AirPods.
They pushed them down, yeah, in terms of pricing. These are the price competitive options, and then the AirPods are the more premium options. That's how they're definitely positioned, as we'll get to in a second with something else they announced, right? Like, these are pretty inexpensive at $199, and the Beats stuff gets discounted pretty aggressively, especially in the run-up to like the holidays and stuff. So you can expect to see these for like $150-ish.
Yeah, definitely like $150 within a couple months, I would guess.
Yep.
But that's really all on Solo 4s. There's not a whole lot here. It's kind of taking the tried and true design, bringing it into the modern era. And that's about it. It's just kind of the facelift that they've been needing for 8 years.
At least they did something to them.
Yeah, at least they did something. When I was reviewing these things, I was having probably one of the worst cases of like writer's block that I've ever had, because I was like, there's just not much to say. Like, I don't necessarily love the Solo 4 design just because they're on ear and not over ear, but clearly they're so incredibly popular. And it was kind of the story here is that they languished for 8 years and stayed so popular, and now they're getting kind of better. And that's a good thing. Not everything has to be revolutionary. The more interesting announcement from Beats, though, I think, is the announcement of something they're calling Beats Solo Buds. So these are Beats' new truly wireless earbuds launching in June. And the headline feature here is that they're $80 and they have 18 hours of battery life. Now, Mayo, when I put that in Slack a couple days ago, you adamantly thought I was wrong.
It sounds wrong to me. It still sounds wrong to me.
On paper, it certainly sounds wrong. 18 hours of battery life from the buds themselves.
Because these are in-ear small buds. They're not like big headphones. They're in-ear little buds, the same kind of size as AirPods-ish.
Because your initial assumption was that it was 18 hours for the buds combined with the charging case.
Yes.
What's interesting here is that the case for the Beats Solo Buds doesn't actually have a battery of any sort. It's a carrying case. Then you put the Solo Buds in the case and connect the case to USB-C, and they'll start charging. The case itself, again, has no battery inside.
But you can go, supposedly, a whole day without needing to charge them at all, supposedly.
Yep, more than a day, probably, for most people. I mean, 18 hours is... 18 hours... What's AirPods? AirPods are like,
six or five. 6 hours. It's like six without noise cancellation and then five with noise cancellation.
So 18 hours from Solo Buds. But of course, you're giving up... I mean, there's no active noise cancellation. There's no transparency mode. They do have the same custom Beats processor.
Yeah, but the non-end noise cancelling AirPods are only like 5 hours battery life, like the AirPods 2, 3 generation. So like compared to them, it seems incredibly, incredibly solid. And it's $80. Like, it's great pricing. It's a shame the charging case doesn't have a battery too, because then you could like go like a whole week theoretically if they could put a battery in the case too. But 18 hours directly is strong, yeah.
The pictures that Beats showed of Beats Solo Buds, I don't think do a great job of conveying just how small the case is, which is like a benefit of there being no battery inside. The case is tiny. Think of an AirPods Pro case, but like squished down even more. So it's the same width, but like much shorter, if that makes sense. It's tiny. It's a tiny case.
And I guess the difference between the Solo Buds and the Studio Buds is no noise cancellation and the charging case difference.
Yeah, that's about it. Before this week, they had Studio Buds and Studio Buds Plus, and they're discontinuing the non-plus Studio Buds. So now it'll be Solo Buds, Studio Buds, Beats Fit Pro, and then Power Beats. I think that's everything. And the Beats earbuds lineup.
I mean, these don't have auto pause, right? They don't have little niceties. But these are really good,
especially on planes.
I took my AirPods on planes before, and I was kind of annoyed that the battery, you have to recharge them. Like, it's one of the few places where you kind of just want to leave them in your ears for like continuous more than 5 hours at a time.
I mean, when I fly, I'll put in my AirPods after going through security, and then not take them off until like I'm getting in the car at the other end of the destination. And I'll have to, but I'll have to stop at some point and recharge them. And it's
And if you've got AirPods in a case combined, you're probably thinking about like 30 hours total battery life, 25 hours, something like that. Mm-hmm. So yeah, if you do have the charging case with the buds, you are getting overall longer battery life. But for a single charge with those tiny little small buds that don't have like stems or anything, you know, they're just little in-ear buds, 18 hours seems incredibly good. I mean, even if you only get half, like the quoted 18, it's still going to be basically two rounds of AirPods charge cycles. So these are pretty solid. And they, you know, if the AirPods 4s come out this year and they only have like 5 or 6 hours battery life still, it seems a bit inferior. I don't really understand. Like, yeah, I mean, obviously stuff like noise cancellation uses more power, but if you have all that stuff turned off, you're still not getting anywhere close to 18 on the current AirPods. I don't know what Beats is doing here to make that happen, but assuming it's correct, I think it's a decent trade-off, yeah.
You said that Apple is telling Beats not to make their stuff too good, but yet here we are with Beats Solo Buds.
Yeah, and $79, one replacement AirPod is like $60.
Yeah, that's true.
Like a single bud. The charging case is like $70. Like, you can get... Like, I don't know, these seem really compelling to me. Would I personally choose them over AirPods? Oof. If I was doing long flights, I probably would. Like,
really? You think so?
I mean, the thing is, if you're doing long flights a lot, then you probably want noise cancelling.
Like, right.
And I still probably wouldn't pick AirPods Max. I think they're too heavy. So maybe either AirPods Pro or like other headphones, like the other Beats headphones that do noise cancelling. But if you're just doing like train journeys and stuff that are long, I don't know, maybe I think about these because I also like, because they're cheaper as well, you can feel less pressures about them. Like even today with the AirPods stuff, it's like, you know, if they fall out and I lose one, it's kind of a pain and you have to pay a lot of money to get them replaced. Like here, these are like more cheap and more disposable-ish, you know, like I think they're pretty compelling, especially for younger children as well. Like, you know, if you've got like kids and stuff and you don't want to buy $200 AirPods, you can just kind of get these for like $70. They'll probably be discounted as well, like even cheaper soonish. And you don't have to worry about charging them repeatedly. You just put them in your ears and you can use them all day and then you can be done. Like, these seem pretty good to me.
And these, again, will be available, I think they said, in June for $80. There'll be 4 different colors, matte black, storm gray, arctic purple, and just an incredible looking transparent red. Following in the footsteps of the Studio Buds Plus, which were in that like transparent clear color. And this transparent red just looks awesome. More transparent stuff everywhere, please.
Yeah, and I said this about when the Studio Buds came out too, but like they're more slimline and closer to the ear than AirPods are because they don't have any of the stem stuff. Mm-hmm. So like on form factor, they're pretty remarkable, to be honest. So they're definitely on my radar.
And but, each earbud has the B button on it that you can use to like control the playback, activate Siri, and you can customize what that B button does in the settings app. So yeah, smaller form factor, and you don't lose the on-ear controls either.
Yeah, I don't love the visible branding. Like, that's one of the AirPods advantages. They don't have like an Apple logo on them. But
everybody knows that they're AirPods. They don't need visible branding.
It's true. And if you want to be more discreet, you can get the black ones of the Studio Buds. Yeah, that's true. Or the Solo Buds, which AirPods are still white only, even today.
And then the third and final piece of, it's not really news yet, but Beats is teasing that something's happening with the Beats Pill. So this was their like Bluetooth portable speaker that they sold for years. I don't actually remember when they stopped selling it.
They recalled them, didn't they? Because it caught on fire or something.
They recalled one of them because it was burning people's houses down. Yes.
Yep.
And then ever since that happened, they never brought it back. But last weekend, LeBron James at a Lakers playoff game was seen carrying in some sort of unknown, unseen Beats Pill speaker. With like a built-in lanyard, which none of the previous Beats Pill speakers supported. We know pretty much absolutely nothing here, but my mind instantly jumped to the rumors from a few years ago that Beats was going to make a Bluetooth/AirPlay battery-powered speaker.
Well, if you want to be even stronger than that, when AirPlay 2 was announced in like 2017, the Beats logo was on the slide of compatible manufacturers.
Oh,
so
right.
They promised an AirPlay 2 speaker for 5 years, if not longer, and it never materialized. So maybe this is it. Because I can't remember what the brand is, but there's the other one that's like a portable AirPlay 2 speaker that is pretty, the similar form factor, like this, and it like zips up. I can't remember who makes it. When I saw this photo on the LeBron James things, it kind of reminded me of that kind of thing. So maybe they're finally actually going to deliver on their AirPlay 2 promise.
Because that rumor was from 2018. So, and they said, that rumor said it would be Beats branded $199 AirPlay enabled smart speaker. But of course, that hasn't actually happened. The Beats Pill Plus was $229, then Apple cut the price to $180. So like a $200 Beats AirPlay speaker, I would buy that in a heartbeat, as long as it was portable, like battery powered. I would buy that first day, right away.
Yeah, hopefully they actually announce it.
Yeah. This is how Beats rolls out products, though. They give it to some NBA player or something and let the paparazzi take pictures of him walking into a game. And then Beats PR will send you the image and say, hey, what's he holding? What's this? mysterious, right? And then you post the teaser. Then a few weeks later, we find it in a beta. Then they announce it. So that's incredible. Probably the form factor of this rollout. But yeah, hopefully soon. So we'll
wait soon. For the next
beta. Yeah, exactly.
know what it is. Incredible. Happy Hour this week is brought to you by Collide. Check them out at collide.com/happyhour. You've probably heard us talk before about Collide, but did you know that they were just acquired by 1Password? These two companies have been leading the industry in creating solutions that put users first, and now they've come together to make even more progress on that mission. For over a year, Collide Device Trust has helped companies with Okta ensure that only known and secure devices can access their data. Collide ensures that if a device isn't secure, it can't access your company's sensitive apps and information. And that's what they're still doing, but now as part of 1Password. So if you've got Okta and you've been meaning to check out Collide, now is a great time to start. Collide comes with a library of pre-built device posture checks, and you can write your own custom checks for just about anything that you can think of. Plus, you can use Collide on devices without MDM, like your Linux fleet, contractor devices, and every BYOD phone and laptop in your company. So now that Collide is part of 1Password, their offerings are only going to get better. Check it out at collide.com/happyhour to learn more and watch the demo. That's Collide, KOLIDE.com/happyhour. Thanks to Collide for sponsoring the show.
So last Friday, I was just chilling on the couch, probably watching baseball, and I was scrolling Twitter, and I saw a tweet from our friend Max Weinbach, who said that he was on a FaceTime call and then just got logged out of his Apple ID, not only on his iPhone, but across all of his different Apple devices. I saw this tweet and I didn't think a whole lot of it. Like, that happens sometimes, you know. Apple ID is buggy. Sign back in, you're good to go. Well, over the next few hours, we saw a lot. Like, I don't know the scale of this problem, but a lot of reports about people getting signed out of their Apple IDs on all of their devices. And then when they would go to sign back in, they'd be told that their password was incorrect, their Apple ID was locked, and they had to set up a new password. Then log back in across again every single device signed in to that Apple ID. It seems like this problem was primarily on Friday night, last Friday night, and then it kind of continued to happen to some people over the weekend, and I haven't seen any reports of it happening since then. But we also haven't gotten any confirmation, commentary, statement from Apple whatsoever. And that, I think, is the more interesting part of this story. Because you sign a bunch of people out of their Apple IDs across all of their devices, tell them that their account is locked for incorrect password or suspicious reasons, then make them sign back in. You don't really want to mess with people when it comes to security stuff like that. It doesn't create confidence in the system.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's the security aspect and there's the annoying bug aspect of it. Like
that too, yeah.
So if you get locked out of your Apple ID, it's a real pain to get back up and running. Like, so much
Very
stuff
much so.
Just assumes that your account's going to be permanently there because most of the time it is. And so when you don't have it, you have to, like, you know, sign in on loads of devices. You've got to turn iMessage and FaceTime back on in loads of different places. They can't do it for you automatically because of all the end-to-end encryption stuff. So you have to go and manually turn off stuff everywhere, re-log in, do your two-factor authentication, find out that your HomePod can't connect to Apple Music anymore, so you turn that off and on again. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, you've got to go around and do a lot of stuff. Your HomeKit, like security cameras, probably stopped working and da-da-da-da-da. Thankfully, this didn't actually impact me.
Same.
Although I did see plenty of people complaining about it, it didn't impact me personally. But if it is you, and even though I wasn't personally impacted, I expected them to say something about it. Like,
oh yeah,
it is mental. You know, you've either got the inconvenience and the annoyance and the customer frustration, or you've got the security breach angle. Now, mm-hmm. I don't think it was a security breach, because we've seen issues like this before of similar symptoms where people just get locked out of their Apple ID and they, you know, the servers are down, they've got to log back in later, and then something happens and it like bugs out and then you have to reset your password. Like, that is the likely situation that happened here. It was just like a server backend problem, and then, you know, for whatever reason, now it's fixed. But it is pretty bizarre that they said not one word about it, because this is, at least anecdotally, the most widespread instance of this happening. I've covered something like this before, and it was like, you know, a dozen reports or whatever, and then it kind of downed down with like a day. This was like the persistently over the weekend, more and more people I kept seeing popping mm-hmm. up. Yeah. And who knows how many more people it happened to that aren't, you know, tweeting or making forum threads, you know? So like, it feels like a pretty widespread issue. And the fact that they didn't say anything about it was kind of incredible. I'm not expecting, you know, an entire post-mortem or complicated rundown or like a press release, like a statement to somebody just being like, yeah, we had a problem. We apologize for the inconvenience, and now customers should be able to log back in again, would have sufficed. And they didn't do any of it. You know, there's some companies that do have a much more open approach to this kind of stuff. And they will write, like, you know, Cloudflare is like a CDN provider. Anytime they have an outage, they'll fix a problem. And like within a week, they've got like a full blog post describing the technical intricacies of every single little mm-hmm. issue that went to this happening, because they respect their customers and their server uptime, right? And then here's Apple, and they're like, yeah, you know this like ID thing we require you to use for literally everything? Well, it broke in a pretty big way, and we won't even like say sorry. And the system status page didn't even say anything either, nope. Right? So like, it was literally radio silence from all angles. So I wasn't very happy about that.
Like you said, the statement didn't need every detail, but saying, yes, it happened, yes, we fixed it, and all of your accounts are safer. It was no security breach, or there was no hack. You're not being hacked. Something to just give that peace of mind that people's accounts are safe in an era of pretty constant, like, multi-factor authentication, like bombing, like flooding people with that stuff, or phishing attempts, just some sort of peace of mind saying that you're fine.
Yeah, because that two-factor bombing problem was only a couple of weeks ago, right? That's mm-hmm. recent memory. Yeah.
Yep.
And they did comment on that, right? They're saying they patched yeah. it or whatever. And then here was an issue of similar-ish, and they said nothing at all, which is just kind of bizarre. What happens quite a lot of time is when there's like an intermittent bug like this, or like an iCloud issue that affects some percentage of users, they'll make like a page on their support website. And not necessarily linked to it, but it will just kind of exist. So I guess if
yeah.
like AppleCare requests come in, they can then direct people to a page, and it will just be a page like, what to do if your Apple ID says you need to reset your password in this instance, and it'll blah, 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 and it'll have like a short couple of paragraphs. But I don't know if people are just on holiday or something, but they just did nothing at all. And it's now like almost a week later, and they're clearly just trying to pretend like it never happened. Definitely a black mark here. I don't think it's good form.
Another wrinkle too that could make this even more of a headache for people is if they were asked to reset their Apple ID password and they had stolen device protection enabled and they weren't at home, they had to wait the hour to reset their Apple ID password. So there were people theoretically who were signed out of their Apple ID out at a bar or something, and they couldn't reset their password. They had to wait an hour. That is not a really great situation when you consider everything on your iPhone is tied to being signed in to your Apple ID. iMessage, FaceTime.
I mean, that is the downside of stolen device protection, right? If you do need to reset your credentials when you're not at home, here's an hour.
Which is a reasonable thing when you're the one initiating the password reset, but when you're just sitting there and all of a sudden you're signed out of everything, I don't think that's what people had in mind.
It definitely hurts the confidence in the system a bit, right?
Am I crazy too for this kind of... Because it didn't happen to me, which I said, but it kind of makes you think about how much of your digital life is tied to your Apple ID and your Apple account. It made me think about that and made me question whether it's smart to have everything in iCloud, or whether you should diversify and like keep your passwords and your passkeys in one password rather than have everything locked to your Apple ID.
I mean, you can do that, but then you also run into other problems of inconveniences. Like, it is really handy to just have it all in one place and generally cheaper, right? Because you don't have to pay for separate subscriptions on things.
Yeah, like, true.
You know, I use HomeKit Secure Video for my security camera thing.
Mm-hmm.
almost primarily because they don't have to pay extra for it. Like, you know, all these other home camera solutions, they'll charge you for storage and recording, which, okay, that's their business, but here's Apple's option and they'll just store it for free. So it's like, well, you know, and it's nicely integrated into the home app and you can use it with like Siri or whatever else, and it's on the Apple TV. So like, I don't really want to use other stuff. That's why it's so significant and important for when there are issues that you have to be transparent and open and apologize for it.
Exactly.
Because if this happened, you know, once a week, once a month, then people would do exactly what you were saying and they'd divorce themselves as much as possible. I chose not to use the iCloud custom domain thing for email, right? Mm-hmm. Which is a feature that you can theoretically use now where you can have your own domains and not pay extra for email because you can just use your iCloud storage and use Apple Mail, Apple's mail service. But iCloud Mail has consistent issues, you know, spam problems and just, you know, the account's down, you can't get in. This happened like loads, like the last like 4 years, there's been like an outage like 10 times at least about Apple Mail in one way or the other. And so I elected to not touch that with a barge pole. So now I pay like, I mean, I did it before because I couldn't use a custom domain, but now I could use my like me@bzmail.com domain with iCloud and save money because it would just be part of my 2 terabytes. But I pay separately because I don't really trust the Apple Mail system to always be up. And to be fair to them, in recent months, they haven't had outages there. But it still makes me suspicious. And so they're going to have to accrue more years of credit yet before I trust them with my email. But overall, the good news is this is like, you know, a story because it's so rare. Like, it's not super common, you know? Like, so it really becomes a matter of persistence. Like, if this happens every month or, you know, even a couple more times, then people will be more motivated to switch out. As it stands, I think it's really bad and a bit shameful they didn't even apologize for it. But it hasn't made me, like, change any of my behaviors.
I think that there's a good chance we wouldn't be talking about it right now if they had just said something and said it was fine. Because that's
the
bigger part of the story to me, is that they've said nothing. And I asked multiple times.
We might mention it for like 1 minute, you know. The fact it's a topic because I feel like they mishandled it.
And I asked multiple times in my communications. I said, like, I don't know if we've ever gotten this many questions about something like this before, because we were getting bombarded with questions. And you'd go on Twitter, Threads, Mastodon, it. Everybody was talking about it. People who had it happen to them and then didn't check social media for a few hours, like, were so confused and thought that they had been like hacked or somebody was trying to hack their Apple ID.
Yeah, and something these are people that pay attention to like 9-to-5 Mac. You got to think of the wider population that are just regular people that have no, you know, they don't even know a website called 9-to-5 Mac exists, right? What they, you know, who knows what's going on to them? They must be super confused. And you have to imagine like the Apple Care support phone lines were like slammed and stuff. So bad Apple there, bad Apple.
In terms of problems that Apple did address, apparently there's like an increasingly widespread problem across, particularly people are complaining on TikTok about their iPhone alarms not properly playing a sound. I haven't had this problem, but people on TikTok swear that it's happening, and they basically say their alarm goes off in the morning, but their iPhone doesn't play the alarm sound. Apple did acknowledge this to a few different outlets. I saw it from Joanna Stern at the Wall Street Journal. And Apple basically said it's aware of the problem and it's working on a fix. Have you had this happen to you? Because I didn't even know it was a problem until I saw Joanna's post.
I haven't had it happen to me, but I had seen a few people on like Threads and stuff talking about it like a week or so ago. They were like talking about the alarm not ringing. And the problem with that is when it's isolated incidents, it's so hard to work out if it's not user error or something, or like just weirdness, or you can't trust people individually, because, you know, a lot of people don't have they use the iPhone with the change with buttons setting. So like you can just change the volume on the side and it changes the volume of the alarm. So like, you know, that's just how the feature works. So if that's the problem, turn that off. I don't understand people that use it that way around. I turn change with buttons off all the time and just set my ringer and alert once in settings and make sure it never changes. Or you also have issues where like if you sleep with your phone, like in bed, which I know you shouldn't do, but loads of people do. Well, when the alarm goes off, sometimes the attention awareness feature will just silence the alarm because it's looking at your face. So like, yeah, that is kind of wrong, but it's also just doing what it's meant to do. So like, who knows? But then also clearly Apple's acknowledged that with a recent update, there's just a situation where the alarm like goes off as in the screen wakes up, but it doesn't actually make a noise. So people are missing their alarms and not waking up. And there was a Now, you know, with hindsight, I'm like, oh yeah, this probably wasn't a situation that was popping around on a few different places. But I haven't had it personally.
No, me neither. But I rely on my Apple Watch to wake me up in the morning, just on my wrist. So I don't rely on the iPhone sound to wake up. So
yeah, I use the bedtime alarm one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's like this, it starts quiet and it gets louder.
Yeah.
Right. Apple didn't really expound on their description. So I don't know if it affects the bedtime alarm or just affects normal alarms. Cause I think most people just use the standard alarm system. But at least for me, it hasn't happened, but hopefully they can fix it promptly. What did kind of stick out was that they didn't say, and it'll be fixed with the next update. They're just like, we're working on it. So like, hopefully they know what they're doing there, but we'll find out soon enough, I guess. At least they acknowledged it.
Yeah, that's, I mean, I guess people,
because they could, this is the amount of volume of complaints that we'd seen on this was like way low enough that,
oh yeah,
you know, we hadn't even posted about it before. So that one, they're like, good to come out and say about it. But the everyone's Apple ID's getting locked clearly didn't hit that bar for still confusing reasons.
They only acknowledged the alarms one probably because the Today Show did a segment about it, or is going to do a segment about it. So maybe if we get the Today Show to say that people are signed out of their Apple IDs, maybe hacked, maybe not, we don't know, then Apple will say something. But at least the alarms will be fixed at some point, maybe in the future. In an
the BBC unknown. Had a good headline. They were like, Apple addresses alarming iPhone bug. Yeah, I thought, oh, good job to the headline right there. Happy Hour this week is also sponsored by Incogni. Get an exclusive 60% discount at incogni.com/happyhour. You might not know that there are hundreds of commercial databases and people search sites that hold your personal information. They aggregate information like your name or aliases, your social security number, your home address, online activity, and more. And all of this is made available for purchase by businesses and could fall into the hands of criminals. In a nutshell, your personal information is being sold or published online without even knowing about it. Now, you have the legal right to protect your privacy and request data brokers delete the information that they hold about you. But the bad news is that would take you ages to actually do that manually. And that's only doing it once. You have to keep repeating the process every few months as new data brokers continue collecting your data and creating new records about you. So what's the solution? Well, it's Incogni. They do all the work on your behalf. You sign up, you tell them what your personal data you want removing is, and you let them handle it. They contact the data brokers on your behalf to request your data is removed. They deal with any of the objections or, you know, complaint system. They keep you updated and they keep protecting your data privacy for as long as you use their service. So sign up and they're the ones that maintain your data privacy. Check them out right now at incogni.com/happyhour and get an exclusive 60% off your annual Incognito plan with promo code happyhour. That's spelled incogni.com/happyhour. Promo code happyhour. That's incogni.com/happyhour. Thanks to Incogni for sponsoring the show.
Some new iOS 18 rumors, this time particularly focused on Safari. Presumably this would be Safari version 18 on iPhone, iPad, and Mac. A couple of things here. First, we have something called Web Eraser. So the report from Apple Insider explained that Web Eraser will basically allow people to look at a website and then remove certain elements of that website just with Safari without any sort of third-party extensions. So you can imagine you're looking at 9to5mac.com and you say, well, let's just address the most likely scenario head on.
The elephant in the room.
You're looking at 9to5mac.com, a publication offered for free supported by advertisements. And you say, hey, I don't want to see these ads anymore. Theoretically, with Web Eraser in iOS 18, you'll be able to, with a touch of a button, just remove the ads on 9to5mac.com.
Yeah, I think the idea is you like select a region of the page and it would like delete all those elements from you seeing them.
Exactly, yeah.
And there are some use cases which aren't ad blocking related. Like, you know, maybe you want to hide a sidebar or a section of a website you don't care about. But, you know, euphemistically, I think people want to erase the ads is why it's called Web Eraser.
And any changes you make would persist every time you visit that web page. So if you go to 9to5mac.com the first time, you erase all of the advertisements. Theoretically, every subsequent time you go to 9to5Mac.com, those ads will also be gone. Presumably that's banking on like the code not changing in between each visit. Like if we moved our ad slots, that would probably mean people who had previously erased ads from the webpage would start seeing ads again, and it would be sort of like a cat and mouse game. That's my interpretation on how other third-party extensions implementation of features like this work.
Yeah, because like Arc Browser and some other like third-party extensions have similar things like this, where you can like zap parts of the pages away or like customize in that way. And there isn't like, if the website annotates every section, you know, with perfect stable identifiers, then of course you can always remove them. But if you change the identifiers, there's not really a way for the website to know that that's the same thing.
Right.
I mean, I guess if you really want to be clever, you could use like some AI model and like look at the screen and like figure out what the kind of semantic value of a particular section is. But that's quite an expensive operation to do for every page load. So that's probably not what it'll be. It'll just be based on like the identifiers or like the structure of the HTML. And if the page changes significantly, then those won't be able to be maintained.
This boils down, I think, to Apple adding what is basically an ad blocker to Safari natively.
Which they kind of already support.
Sort of.
With content reader, blockers.
And with reader mode, too.
And reader mode, yeah. Reader mode's probably the longest standing one. The thing with reader mode is the whole web page still loads first time, right?
Yeah,
so you have to click a button to like take out the section. Content blockers isn't like that, right? Safari itself doesn't block the ads, but you can download an app from the App Store and they promote loads of them that do exactly that. And then this is kind of like that, but it's like you are the content blocker. Like you select the bits that disappear. I mean, from a publishing standpoint, I wish these kind of features weren't so prevalent these days, because I kind of feel like the trade-off with the web is like, you know, you get it for free and you take the web page as is. And if you don't enjoy the ads or the experience on a website, then you don't have to visit the website. But visiting the website and just erasing the bits that make the website money feels kind of bad. But from the Apple's perspective, it matches what third-party browsers offer. They can talk about it from a privacy angle, I'm sure.
It is
kind of in vain with the content blocker. Like if you can do a content blocker, then this is just kind of like a more intelligent version of one of those. So I can see why they're doing it, but obviously I'm not like particularly thrilled about it.
Yeah, I don't think we can give an unbiased opinion on this. I don't think it's the right call. I know they'll take the privacy angle, and that's fine, but they already have a lot of anti-tracking privacy features that kind of nerf the targeting aspect of online advertising. And this is, it's just the next step in that, I suppose, is how they'll explain it.
The only thing I will say in its favor is that a content blocker basically blocks all ads indiscriminately.
Yeah.
Right? So like you install the extension and it just blocks every ad on every page that it knows about. Some of them offer like whitelist and blacklist, but like nobody ever does, right? They just leave it at the default. So you don't see anything. At least with a web eraser kind of mode, you, the user, could choose not to block ads on websites that you like. Do you know what I mean? Like, so
yeah, that's true.
Like you could block it on one page that's particularly egregious. Like there are some, because I don't think 9to5Mac Max too bad, but some websites, you get those full, like, you know, interstitials, overlays, you know, pop-ups and all this. Like some of the, like the Daily Mail websites are awful for this. So like, you know, maybe you erase the Daily Mail so you could read the actual article, but you don't erase, you know, your favorite tech podcast websites or blogs that you actually like. So that's the only credit I'll give it.
The other new feature, according to this Apple Insider report, is a feature. A few weeks ago, we talked about this series summarization reference that we had found in like server code from Apple. And this rumor basically builds upon that and says there'll be something called intelligent search in Safari in iOS 18. So this tool will apparently identify topics and key phrases within a web page and then generate a summary of that page. And it says it's not enabled by default in iOS 18, at least in some of the builds right now. And it'll instead be activated on a per website, like per link basis, through what the report says is a completely redesigned controls menu in Safari's address bar. This makes quite a bit of sense. Again, it's what we keep talking, referencing Arc from the browser company. It kind of has made a name for itself as offering these summarization features on web pages.
Yeah, and what is one thing that LLMs do really, really well?
Yep.
Is take like a whole page of text and summarize it. So like, you kind of circumvent the hallucination problem when the task is just like take everything this page and make it less verbose. So like they're pretty good at doing that. So I'm not surprised that Apple wants to offer that sometime, because it's kind of just an extension of Reader, right? Like Reader mode.
Yeah.
Instead of having to read like the entire Wikipedia page, you could just like summarize it and read two sentences or whatever.
The downside to this is that for us, yes, it does, at least it probably will, like Reader mode, strip out ads, but it's not enabled by default. And again, you still have to view the web page in the first place to activate it. So I'm less pessimistic about this as I am about Web Eraser or whatever it's called. And this could actually be useful on certain places. So,
yeah, I mean, we'll have to wait until we see the UI, but like, I kind of imagine it as like an overlay or like a thing that you like comes up on the side. So like you see the whole website, you're still seeing the actual page. There's a little summary on the side. Not really that different from just like, you know, having the page read out to you using one of those extensions or Reader mode, or like, you know, there's always going to be some leniency with the way the web works in terms of how people consume it. Doing summaries and like, you know, practically speaking, if you want to do anything useful with the summary, you're probably going to read the whole article anyway, but it's just there if you want to like skim and move along. So I have less, you know, it's less offensive than erasing everything permanently every time you refresh the page or whatever. And the reason it's not on by default is probably because it'll only show up when it's on a page that the AI has recognized it can actually make sense to make a summary for. So like, you know, like the twitter.com timeline probably won't have a summary because it doesn't really make sense to do it. It'd be like articles situations, which again is just how Reader mode works, right? Like it's not there for every website because it doesn't make sense to be.
So you know what we haven't talked about for a while? The Digital Markets Act. You want to do a check-in with our friends in the European Union?
We did have
Union.
A few weeks of reprieve.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when Apple announced all of its changes back in January, we explained that basically the Digital Markets Act designated the entirety of the App Store as a gatekeeper service and that iOS as a platform as a gatekeeper service. So the iOS aspect of that applied only to the iPhone. At the time, iPadOS on the iPad was a completely different platform in the eyes of obviously Apple, and then Apple convinced the European Commission to buy into that argument. So this meant that things like the ability to install third-party app marketplaces and download apps from third-party app marketplaces would be only on iPhone, not the iPad. The new Safari browser, default browser prompt would be only on the iPhone. Third-party browser engines would be only on the iPhone. And the sort of set of NFC and wallet apps app changes would be only on the iPhone. But changes to the App Store policy, like alternative payments and lower commissions, would be the App Store across all of Apple's platforms, as well as game streaming apps, as we've talked about. That applies worldwide and on all of Apple's platforms. Well, this week, the European Commission became hip to Apple's argument that maybe iPadOS isn't a completely separate platform from the iPhone and iOS after all. So the European Commission now says that Apple will have to bring all of its DMA-related changes to the iPad in addition to iPhone. So this means we'll get sideloading on the iPad and alternative browser engine support on the iPad.
Of which there are none.
Still. As of right now, yes. Correct.
Yeah. And the reason there aren't is because nobody wants to pay the fees. Because to do any of that stuff, you've got to be subject to the core technology fee. You're not allowed to have an alternative browser engine in the App Store. You have to accept the alternative business terms.
I'm not surprised that this happened and that the DMA or that in the European Commission realized that iPadOS is basically the same as iOS.
Yeah, Apple originally argued that it didn't reach the benchmark for number of users, so it wasn't big enough to be a gatekeeper, but obviously the EU disagrees. And the EU basically has some rules about what counts as a gatekeeper or not, but they also reserve the right to basically just choose. So they're like, yeah, this is, yeah. So it's in. So it's like, well, here you go.
It does highlight the sort of, I've said it before, but this sort of scattershot approach of
ad hoc
policy. The European Commission has this piece of DMA guidelines that in and of itself is vague and kind of a living document.
It's definitely vibes. They go on vibes.
Yeah.
I mean, from Apple's perspective, implementation would be really easy. On the server, they can just flick one switch that says this applies to iOS, now it also applies to iPadOS, because they've conditionalized everything already for every of the geographic segments or the device platform. So they don't really have to do any work here, I don't think. They'll just be annoyed about it.
And they had to have known it was coming.
Yeah, exactly. I think they were lucky it wasn't there from the beginning, so they've saved a few months. And with a six-month enforcement period, it'll basically be right around iOS 18 release date, right? Like iPadOS 18 in kind of September timeframe. maybe 18.1. But the revenue and kind of like monetization part of it is like insignificant. The iPhone is where the money happens, right? Like that's where the usage is the highest. Everything's just more extreme there. So like if Apple wants to have a fight, they want to fight on the iPhone. The iPad,
yeah,
they obviously don't want it, but it's not really going to make a difference to their business, right? It's the same as the Mac, right? The Mac's an open platform fully, and they're not super worried about revenue there either because it's just way smaller. Like, the iPhone is so big that it almost doesn't really matter what happens elsewhere. Apple would love it if the DMA only applied to the iPad, not the phone, for instance.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's not going to happen. The big question for the future of the DMA is, like, the core technology fee still, and that's under review. You know, Spotify and others complained about it. The commission said they're looking into it, but the results of that aren't expected for like months, or maybe it's like a whole year review period. So we'll see what happens there. As long as the core technology fee stands as it is, so many companies are just disincentivized from even trying this stuff. So
this would mean too that web distribution is coming to the iPad, right?
Yes. Yep.
I could see that being maybe more useful on the iPad, again, if anybody actually supports it, than it is on the iPhone.
If you didn't have the core technology fee, loads of people would do it.
Yeah.
It's the fee that makes it a blocker.
Because we know that SetApp /MacPaw is planning an alternative app store in the EU. There's a company called Mobivi or something like that. They're planning an alternative app store. And then, of course, you have AltStore Pal from Riley Testut, which is already available with a couple of apps in it.
To his credit, he actually did ship as soon as possible.
Yeah.
It only has two apps in it, Delta and the Clips one for the Clipboard Manager, but it does exist. Finally this week, Happy Hour is brought to you by Ladder. If you're anything like me, you have a certain tendency to put things off until the very last minute. Dentists, optician's appointments, filing taxes, that kind of stuff. And, you know, it's usually fine, but you shouldn't mess around and wait when it comes to life insurance. Get term coverage life insurance through Ladder today. Go to ladderlife.com/happyhour to see if you're instantly approved. You know, I started needing glasses, and that was a moment that was, oh, I'm getting older. And stuff like life insurance somehow feels immediately more relevant. Life insurance gives you the peace of mind to know that your family will be taken care of if the worst happens. Ladder is a 100% digital service. When you apply for $3 million in coverage or less, that means no doctors, no needles, and no paperwork. It's all done online. You just need a phone or laptop to apply. You fill out Ladder's application form, and their smart algorithms work in real time and tell you instantly if you're approved. And Ladder has no hidden fees, and you can cancel at any time. Get a full refund if you cancel within the first 30 days. And Ladder's policies are issued by insurers with long, proven histories of paying claims. And Ladder's customers rate them 4.8 out of 5 stars on Trustpilot. So if you've been thinking about getting life insurance, Ladder is the place to do it. If you aren't sure, but you just want some more information, go on Ladder's website, fill out their online calculator, and you can see the costs and terms of the plan with no commitment. And as the cost of life insurance goes up as you age, now is the time to act and get it done. So go to ladderlife.com/happyhour today to see if you're instantly approved. That's ladderlife.com/happyhour. One more time, ladderlife.com/happyhour. Thanks to Ladder for sponsoring the show.
As we record this, we are 5 days away from letting loose with Apple's May 7th special event. We've talked a lot about all of the rumors. I think we have a pretty good picture of what's coming. But then Mark Gurman last weekend in Power On decided to throw a little bit of a twist our way. A little bit of a surprise. He says that the upcoming iPad Pro may actually be powered by the M4 chip and skip the M3 altogether. The idea being that Apple would tout the artificial intelligence prowess of the M4 chip compared to the M3 and the current M1 iPad Pro. The first M4 Max aren't expected until later this year, so this would be the first M4 device whatsoever from Apple, and it would be the first time that Apple has debuted a new Apple Silicon chip in an iPad Pro. When I first read this report, I was pretty skeptical, but the more I think about it, the more I suppose it makes sense, depending on the timeline of iPadOS features, and honestly, how long we'll wait in between revisions of this iPad Pro and whatever's next. Because Apple doesn't seem keen on necessarily updating the iPad Pro or any iPad every year.
Yeah, they're like 18-month schedules, typically, at minimum.
Yeah, so
the Yeah, I was surprised, obviously, when I saw this in Gamer's newsletter, but by the time I'd finished, like, reblogging it, I was kind of on board.
Yeah.
Because, like, the M3 generation was delayed. That's, I'm talking about the laptops here. So, like, by all intents, by all reports and indications, the M3 MacBook Airs would have come out last year, right? And so all the M3 stuff would have been a 2023 situation. It wouldn't have spilled over into this year. And now we're in 2024. It's the M4 year. What does 6 months difference make? Not much. Therefore, it's going to start with the iPad, right?
Like, yeah.
I don't think you need to make a big leap here. And Gurman speculates that they're going to tout the AI stuff. I'm sure they will, because they'll tout the AI stuff even at an M2 chip still in it. You know, like, it does. The M3 MacBook Air is the best consumer laptop for artificial intelligence. So the iPad's going to be that too. And if it's got an M4 chip in it, it will have a bigger neural engine. They can, you know, advertise and stuff. Do I think that they're going to, like, front run WWDC and iOS 18 and, like, bring forward features that would otherwise come then? No, but they'll probably, like, stress how it's, like, prepared for the modern workloads of blah, 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 blah. Talk about, I don't know, Pixelmator super resolution, how much faster it is with the neural engine, the M4. You know, maybe they can do some Metal Effects upscaling stuff and show off some games, because they'd like to do that a lot. And, you know, this looks really good. You know, console quality games, but are powered by the neural engine with some AI upscaling, da, 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 da. And then that'll basically be the story. And then sometime later, they'll be able to take advantage of the iOS 18 stuff too, running locally. The other part of why is an M4 chip now not seem as crazy? The M3 chips are all made on the N3B process from TSMC, which was kind of like a weird offshoot. And basically, Apple demanded that TSMC commit to that process to ship, because they had phones primarily, and also, you know, the M3 line was built on it. But TSMC wants everyone to move over to N3E fabrication, which quality-wise, it produces about the same, like, in terms of performance, but it's basically way more efficient, i.e. the yields are way higher. And so TSMC want people to move to that process because it's cheaper for them, because more they don't have to throw less of it away. Mm-hmm. There is a report out there from a year or so ago that Apple has, like, a special deal with TSMC where that if there are yield problems, they don't pay for the faulty ones. Like, Apple doesn't pay, TSMC pays. So basically, it's in TSMC's interest to get Apple to move over to other fabrication. So if they can push forward the production of M4 slightly, you know, that's better for them. So we expect that the A18 stuff will be on N3E and the M4 stuff will be on N3E, because the N3B stuff, you know, TSMC was like, reluctantly, well, we'll do it for you, Apple, because you need to get your phone shipping, but ideally you'd be on a different process. So here's another reason why maybe the M4 is out the door slightly earlier than it otherwise would be. But I think the main point is that in the original scheduling 5 years ago, M3 was meant to be a 2023 thing, M4 is 2024. Here we are.
So you're of the opinion that we won't get, like, a new set of AI features as part of iOS 17.5 or whatever ultimately ships on these new iPad Pros? Maybe we'll get...
I don't think so.
You don't think so?
That's not what I'm expecting, because I think this is a desynchronization of software and hardware, basically, right?
Yeah.
Like, because in some ways, when the M4 was being designed, it was pre the AI craze. Like, because there's a 3 to 4 year lead time on these chips, right? So there's a good chance that the M4 was made and was always going to have a bigger neural engine just for, say, graphics upscaling. Do you know what I mean? Like, they could have just been making the neural engine bigger anyway, and now they get double benefit because they can roll it into their AI strategy. So I don't really pair the two together so much. Like, from what you gather from the iOS 18 stuff, is like Apple's been working, like, pedal to the metal as fast as they can to get as much stuff as they can in, you know, on an accelerated timeline for iOS 18. I don't think there's much indication that they even got any opportunity to get stuff out the door even sooner. And it'd be really weird if they, like, plop something out the door now just for the iPad, just because it has an M4 in it. Like, they've never worked like that. Like, they put random hardware in the iPad all the time. They put the A12Z in there, which had an extra graphics core for no good reason, really. It had a LiDAR scanner that there wasn't anything in the OS that really took a LiDAR, you know, like, it was just kind of existed there. It made more sense on the phone, but, like, you know, here you go. I don't think, you know, everyone loves to think of Apple as having, like, perfectly packaged technologies that they literally exploit every single little thing and nothing more. And they do obviously aim for that in many ways, but there's also years where they just, like, well, this is what we have, so this is what we're shipping. And I kind of feel like that's the situation here. The M4 chip will be faster, you know, 10 to 15% faster on CPU and GPU than the M3. the in-neural engine will be better, which sets them up well for the future. And probably, I think it'll have like some sort of graphics upscale. That's my kind of pet theory, but you know, hasn't it been said? So that will help them with their gaming story. And then maybe later in the year, they can be like, well, all the AI stuff you can do on the iPhone 16, you can also do on the iPad. That kind of deal, the iPad Pro. Because what would they ship now, AI-wise, that makes any sort of sense that shouldn't also be on the phone?
Yeah, I don't know, especially on the iPad, because a lot of the features that maybe apply on the iPhone in terms of camera stuff and Photos app updates, that isn't as applicable on the iPad as it is on the iPhone. Like, the thing people want from a faster, more capable iPad is A, improvements to existing iPad features such as Stage Manager. And then you can imagine maybe some, I don't even know, some AI-powered workflows for photo editing, video editing, like you said, gaming. But so much of it...
If you want me to go out, maybe Final Cut for iPad has like an update where it has some AI-specific features. Like, that's the kind of extent that I'm getting at. I don't think there's going to be like fundamental operating system changes. It just wouldn't make much sense. Like, that trains for the summer, which is only 1 month away in terms of when they announce it, you know? Like, get over yourselves.
The thing I keep remembering, though, is iPadOS 18 is going to be announced in a month, but it's not coming out for, what, 4.5 months, probably?
Sure, yeah.
So that's a big gap to tell somebody to buy a new M4 iPad Pro with this ultra-fast neural engine made for the future of AI. But that future doesn't arrive for you until September. And that's assuming all of the AI features, or even most of the AI features, ship in iPadOS 18.0.
Well, I don't think they'll even sell it on that basis, right? Like, they ship new engines on their iPads today. People don't go, well, I'm waiting for a specific feature that makes use of it. You know, they just buy them when they want them. Like, so they'll talk about the advantages, they'll give you some demos and stuff, but I don't think they're going to be like predicating it on the future.
I think with the iPad, though, people do buy these powerful iPad Pros and say, okay, what can I use this for? Why should I buy the M4? Like, that's been...
All right, here's another example. The 1 terabyte or 2 terabyte iPad Pros came out. What could you use the storage for? Well, just put more storage on there. They had extra RAM. What was the RAM used for? Nothing really.
Yeah, like, that's true.
Do you know what I mean? They just spec them out.
That is fair. I don't know. I think the M4 is a good decision just purely from a future-proofing standpoint, I think. Because remember when Stage Manager launched and there was the big controversy about, oh, it's only coming to the M1 iPads and not the A12 whatever iPads. And then, okay, you can have it on this iPad, but you can only have 2 windows or whatever. Future-proofing with the M4... when clearly more on-device, power-intensive features are coming, is ultimately the right decision. It's just weird. It's just very weird, I think.
Yeah. It is a bit weird, but I think it's probably going to happen. The iPad Pro with M4.
A couple of years ago, 5 years ago, I think Apple probably would have either held back this iPad Pro or done an M2 or M3 iPad Pro right now, and then turned around and done an M4 in 6 months, a year or something. But now the chips are ready, and they're just going to ship it. It's the same strategy we've seen on the Mac. Like, the Apple Silicon era is just different.
Yeah, the chips are ready. Let's go, you know? Like, do we have a complete and consistent, coherent story around everything? No. It's like, here's the chip. This is faster, this is faster, this is faster. Here's some demos, right? Ship the chip, you know? Which is great. Like, I don't think they have to wait every single time to have some sort of, like, crazy narrative around everything. Yeah. It just doesn't always work out that way.
Ship the chip. Apple strategy.
So anyway, I'm looking forward to the event next week. The overall state of the iPad probably won't change too much, because I don't think there's going to be any like fundamental changes to like the iPad software, which is really a limitation. We'll just get some much nicer hardware for it to all go inside.
And some much better and probably, hopefully not more expensive accessories. Mark Gurman says some sort of haptic feedback for the Apple Pencil. The squeeze gesture we reported on.
I think that's the obvious use for the haptics there, is just like when you squeeze, it like vibrates to like like a button kind of. It would be really cool if they could like make the Apple Pencil feel like a crayon or something, like depending on which tool you're using. But I think that's asking too much of haptic feedback. It'll probably just be like you squeeze it, it vibrates to acknowledge that you squeezed it.
And what I'm most excited for, I think, is the new Magic Keyboard for iPad Pros, which more laptop-like, aluminum design. Yeah, so this is our last episode before we let loose, so we'll have everything next Thursday, recapping all of the fun stuff. For now, I think that does it. You can send us feedback, happyhour@9to5mac.com. find an ad-free version of the show with bonus content at 9to5mac.com/join. $5 a month, $50 a year. I'm on Threads, Twitter, Mastodon, at Chance H. Miller. And Mayo, where are you?
At BZA Mayo.
All right. Thanks, Mayo.
Bye-bye.